or no, there was no distinction between slaves back then, in the beginning of the Islamic era. And did they have rights back then? Because I read somewhere that they have rights, and they had even a book, a whole in the Islamic jurisprudence, there's a book of slaves, and many rights are written there, and how you should treat them, and when you should free them, and when they have a right to free themselves. This is something that people does not know. Please elaborate a little bit on the history of slaves.
Well, according to the historical perspective, it wasn't only the dark people, because in the Banu Umayyah's history, we can see they had women from the Rome. The Roman girls were made as a slave. They used
there was no racist motivation.
There was like just if it was a battle between two countries, they used to make like women of that village or city where they used to invade as their slaves. They used to bring them as slaves. So it wasn't about the color all the time. But, you know, why people used to buy, sorry to say this, like African slaves, because they were stronger. And they used to take, you know, hard things from them. They used to work for the, you know,
give them hard labor.
Hard labor, yes. Mm. They were known as the hard labor for them. Mm. And the women's, obviously, there were both types of, you know, colors, even in the male and female. You can see like how Yusuf alayhi salam, he was a child, he was a white. He wasn't even the, you know, we can say, we can't say like he was African, he was an Arab, or he was from, you know,
Middle East.
Middle East. So he was sold in Egypt
as a slave.
As a slave.
So there was no racist motivation.
There is no, yes. The only thing was like they used to see like which person can be used for which work. For hard labor, they used to choose like the strong ones. And for the other things in the house, they used to. So historically, that was the thing. The other thing is, yes, within Islam, there are the rulings, specific rulings for the slaves, and how and when they can like free themselves. These are all mentioned in the books. There are the rights of them that you should not even, you know, make them feel that they are the slaves. It is recommended to sit with them and eat on the same table with them. You know, the
so
Prophet
the,
sallallahu
so
alaihi wasallam.
So the master, so-called master, should sit with his slaves. Yeah,
yeah.
The Prophet.
The rich people of Mecca has this problem with the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, even in Medina, that the main objection was like when he is the Prophet and master of all Ummah, why is he sitting next to the slaves and eating food with them? This was one of the objections by the rich people of Mecca and Medina. So Islam recommends to have mercy upon them,
to sit with them,
to have mercy, to not to give, you know, if it's a hot weather thing, that if you're not if you do not go out there to work, you should not send him out to go to work. So there are many things.
So they have
the
basic
rights,
human
yes,
rights and even
Ahsan.
More advanced human
yes.
rights. Thank you very much, Sayyid. Very
no
interesting
problem.
Subject. I'm sure a lot of the listeners would hear more about it maybe at another time. Thank you very much. This is your host, Haider Al-Mahadli, from Q&A on Islamic Beliefs, broadcasting from IRIB English Radio. Fi amanillah.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Ali. حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين حسن حب آل البيت فرض عندنا حب آل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لا نخشى محن
Round the world with reporters. After days of campaigning for the upcoming presidential vote in Iran, candidates now stand toe-to-toe for a face-off. On Saturday, the seven runners attended the first televised debate, which was aired live on national television. Themed with economy, the first debate required the candidates to answer common questions, ranging from monetary policies to domestic production and boosting exports.
In order to boost domestic production, we need to reduce the taxes levied on our producers and in return increase the taxes on unproductive businesses, such as real estate or forex trading.
8 years ago, in the same place, I showed you a 10,000 rial banknote and warned you that if the current trend went on, our national currency would collapse. We need to take a different approach than using people's pockets to solve the government's problems.
We have prepared a package that consists of 213 projects. 51 of them are focused on harnessing inflation and controlling the prices.
When we speak about eliminating poverty, we're not just talking about basic rights, but it's also about entertainment and health policies. I have a comprehensive plan that can tackle these issues.
We need to turn our focus toward a 500 million strong market that exists in the region and not our 80 million strong domestic market. I mean, we need to strengthen our regional diplomacy and open up to the world to attract investment.
The debate started with random questions to each of the candidates, but got raucous after Abdel Nasser Hemmati picked on the other contenders, saying they're running to promote poverty rather than wealth.
Unlike the other candidates, I don't like to resort to lying to attract more votes. None of them is speaking of the distribution of wealth, but increasing poverty. I will pay equal attention to both creating wealth and its fair distribution.
Hemmati's comment was not left unanswered, as Alireza Zakani lashed out at him by reminding him of his poor performance as the head of the Central Bank of Iran, blaming him for the unprecedented devaluation of the national currency, the rial, which is currently traded at 240,000 against the U.S. dollar.
You have dealt an irreparable blow to the national currency, yet you accuse us of spreading poverty. You have already increased poverty during your tenure, while I speak of national production and boosting it. So please stop making accusations.
There are still two debates to go. The second and third debates will take place on Tuesday and Saturday, respectively, which will investigate the candidates' cultural and political policies.
Well, the debate offers an opportunity for each of the candidates to try to stand out and make the best impression to voters. It also gives a chance to the public to weigh up all the choices in one go. Yet, it's still too soon to judge about who stands a better chance to win the race, since the rivalry is still on. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Yemen Nasrallah movement dismissed as baseless an accusation by the U.S., which mentioned the movement as the main cause behind the war in Yemen. Earlier, the U.S. State Department issued a statement accusing the Nasrallah movement of prolonging the conflict and worsening Yemen's humanitarian crisis by attacking Marib, the last stronghold of the Saudi-backed forces in northern Yemen.
The accusation of the U.S. State Department against the Ansarullah movement is part of a larger plan to stop Yemen's army advancement towards the city of Marib. Yemenis will not give in to these pressures. The mediator must be neutral, but the U.S. is biased towards the Saudi-led coalition.
Yemen said the USB's major responsibility for the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Yemen as it supports the Saudi blockade on the war-torn country. They called on the international community to prosecute the U.S. for committing war crimes against the women and the children of Yemen.
The U.S. State Department is not in a position to accuse Ansarullah movement because the war in Yemen has been led by the U.S. Therefore, the U.S. is involved in the war and cannot serve as a mediator. We call on the international community to put the U.S. on trial over committing war crimes against Yemeni children and women.
Earlier, the head of the Yemeni negotiating delegation participating in peace talks in Oman said the other parties are haggling over the suffering of millions of Yemenis for military gains, adding that it is the right of all Yemenis to obtain food, medicine and fuel, even under the ongoing war.
Yemenis say the U.S. has no right to blame them as it is one of the parties of the current war on their country. They believe that bargaining over their suffering is a clear violation of the international law. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
A number of associations of Palestinians from across Italy jointly organized a demonstration in solidarity with the people of Palestine. A large crowd flooded in Rome's iconic San Giovanni Square to hold a rally dubbed Stop the Occupation, Free Palestine, Jerusalem or Quds is our capital. Protesters held banners and placards reading Stop the War and Sanctions on Israel.
Politicians, trade union members, anti-war campaigners, people from all walks of life have joined the demonstration demanding justice for Palestinians. They are calling on the Italian government to take a firm stance on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
I think it is a matter of political opportunism. That's why Italy's support to Palestine has been shifting towards positions inconsistent with those held in the past. There is also a lack of commitment on the part of the moderate political forces that used to hold a balanced stance on the conflict. The rise of right-wing parties and their alignment with Netanyahu's government has changed the dynamics entirely.
Unfortunately, we know full well how economic interests play a crucial role in foreign policy. But we have some good news finally, as on June 2nd, the European Trade Union Confederation issued a resolution calling on Israel to withdraw from the occupied territories. Also, working movements are shifting towards pro-Palestinian positions.
Protesters also called on EU member states to impose sanctions on Israel to put an end to what they called a flagrant violation of international law taking place in Palestine. Tens of demonstrations in solidarity with Palestine have been held across Italy in recent days. About 2 weeks ago, pro-Palestine groups staged protests at the Rai national broadcaster headquarters and branches in several Italian cities, complaining that the persecution of Palestinians has been sugar-coated in Israel's favor by the public television company. Max Civili, Rome.
Hundreds of British pro-Palestine activists amassed outside a notorious arms manufacturer near Blackburn on Friday, demanding an end to Israeli arms sales. Anger was vented in various ways, including with a funeral procession honouring the recent martyrdom of over 60 children slain in Gaza.
It's a genocide that's occurring before our eyes. Companies like BAE Systems are complicit in what's going on there. They're providing illegal weaponry.
Now they've been exposed, the Zionist regime, because from footage from underground, from Gaza, has come out. And people are starting to realize that this is an apartheid, ethnic cleansing, colonialism regime that is operating, and it has to end.
Today, we came here to send a message to the world. What is the mistake of these children? 64 children have been killed innocent. Some of them were sleeping in the hands of their parents, and they found themselves dead. Why? One, the answer is occupation. In the occupation, everything will be sorted out.
BAE Systems is one of Britain's biggest arms dealers and is known for building weapons used by Middle Eastern regimes to target innocent civilians in conflict zones.
Essentially here to register our protest and say to BAE Systems and to the government that this is simply unacceptable, that weapons manufactured here in Lancashire, here in England, should be used against civilians in Gaza and in Palestine.
This is the second week that local residents have come in good numbers to condemn BAE Systems, and more action is being planned.
Major arms firms such as this have been heavily criticized many times in the past. However, it's very rare for protest movements of this size and frequency to engage in such regular and very direct action. Now, these locals are coming out in numbers, hoping to force a change which will inevitably save lives in places like Palestine and elsewhere too. Robert Carter, Blackburn.
With only less than 2 weeks to go before Iran's presidential elections, the seven candidates have expressed their views and plans in conferences, TV programs, and interviews. Some have criticized the current economic policies, while others pledged to make some fundamental reforms if elected. Mohsen Mehralizadeh said he would seek de-escalation between Iran and other countries, noting that the government should not let for some factors to detach the country from the rest of the world. He also pledged to form a cabinet made of experienced people who are able to solve people's problems. Ebrahim Raisi pledged to do his utmost to end the corruption in the country. He also pointed out the issue of unemployment as a major problem young Iranians are struggling with. He vowed to help the youth with their employment and housing problems. Raisi stressed that his first priority would be people's livelihoods and welfare. Alireza Zakani, who is currently serving as a parliament member, said he would seek a comprehensive progress of the country. He also criticized Iran's current foreign policy and stressed that the country's foreign policy should serve the economy, culture, society, politics, and security by taking a broader horizon into consideration. Former Central Bank Governor Abdul Nasser Himmati said he is a reformist and his main agenda is economic reforms. He called on Iranians to support him with their votes. Himmati noted the mass COVID-19 vaccination would be his first plan after winning the race. Another candidate, Amir Hossein Ghazizadeh Hashemi, said his main goal is to support the people by reducing household expenses and increasing purchasing power. He also pledged to eliminate economic rent-seeking and lessen the government's interference in the process of production, imports, and distribution of goods. Former top nuclear negotiator Saeed Jalili called for a strategy in which people can observe and monitor the performance of the government. However, he called on Iranian people not to wait for anyone and continue their efforts towards the development of the country regardless of who is going to win the presidential race. Mohsen Rizai criticized former and current administrations for adopting wrong economic policies. Rizai said such measures have caused economic hardships Iranians have been dealing with for years. The 66-year-old hopeful also called for unity among Iranians in order to be able to overcome the economic crisis.
Squalid accommodation that was not fit to house human beings fleeing persecution. That was how lawyers representing six asylum seekers described Napier military barracks in Kent in a case brought to the British High Court. In a landmark ruling, Mr. Justice Lyndon agreed and said all of them were
vulnerable victims of trafficking and or torture who experienced a deterioration in their mental health as a result of their accommodation at Napier Barracks.
Napier Barracks has turned into a resident site for vulnerable asylum seekers despite a warning from Public Health England that the dormitories were not suitable accommodation during a pandemic. However, the court found that this advice was not followed, leading to a COVID outbreak infecting half the residents.
The Home Office responded to the ruling with this statement.
Throughout this period, our accommodation providers and subcontractors have made improvements to the site and continue to do so. It is disappointing that this judgment was reached on the basis of the site prior to the significant improvement works which have taken place in difficult circumstances. Napier will continue to operate and provide safe and secure accommodation. We will carefully consider the ruling and our next steps.
Human rights campaigner Adam Yassir came to the UK as a refugee from Darfur in Sudan. He's been supporting asylum seekers who've been staying at Napier Barracks and gave a witness testimony to the High Court.
Multiple asylum seekers asked me to provide a noise cancellation earplugs, and I asked, and they say, the guys say to me, some people scream at night, they've got PTSD.
Calls are mounting for the Home Office to shut down the controversial barracks after a damning court ruling found that they had acted unlawfully and irrationally, which could potentially lead to damages against the British Home Secretary, Priti Patel.
They felt they need to, they've been used to send message to other asylum seekers, people who are trying to seek safety and security in the UK. But it is the wrong way. It is breaking the law to make a point. It's not the right way and it isn't working at all. It isn't working. Hence, someone needs to be accountable and the Home Secretary should actually consider her position.
The ruling by the High Court will be a vindication for lawyers, rights groups and activists alike who for too long have had their concerns regarding Napier Barracks ignored. But they will still feel their fight is far from over while asylum seekers still remain housed there in what the court described as appalling conditions. Ahmed Cabello, London.
In a year not short of drama, the British royal family is embroiled in yet another scandal, claims of historical racism.
Unearthing documents in the UK National Archives, The Guardian has revealed palace officials banned, quote, colored immigrants or foreigners from serving in clerical roles in the royal household until at least the late 1960s. Instead, they were permitted to work as domestic servants.
In the optics of what the royal family has been about, I mean, just a knowledge of history would tell you that it's a highly racialized institution. And regardless of the fact that the Queen runs a Commonwealth, which is a majority of minority ethnic background vis-a-vis the Brits, that would be black and so on, it doesn't surprise me at all.
The ban was eventually ended, but Buckingham Palace has refused to say when, only that its records show employment of ethnic minorities started in the 1990s and that it did not keep records on staff members' race from the decades prior. The archive documents also reveal Queen Elizabeth II has been exempt from race and gender equality laws since their introduction in the kingdom in the 1970s, prohibiting individuals working for her household from suing on discrimination grounds. That exception remains in place to this day.
What is happening is that across the world, people are taking a different view of the royal family. And as she is in charge of the Commonwealth, it does not bode well for the future of the Commonwealth at all.
The new findings come on the heels of allegations earlier this year of racism within the ranks of the royal family from two of its members.
And also concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
And of silence and denials from other members.
Very much not a racist man.
This week, the Queen will be marking a huge annual spectacle celebrating decades of her reign. Will the new revelations put a damper on the British monarch's so-called platinum jubilee? Saidpur is up, London.
The race for the top executive post in Iran rages on among the seven candidates who appear before reporters every day to outline their plans. Plans for a brighter future, stronger economy, and more opportunities for the youth. So journalists rarely ask contenders about what they have done in the past, but what they will do should they win the election.
The first move that my administration will focus on is to uproot poverty in the first year. If poverty is eliminated, our people will excel in culture and enlightenment.
I will pay special attention to the youth and their problems. Unemployment is now the first and foremost issue of our youth. As an economist, I believe that if we remove the uncertainty in our market, we can easily create jobs. Also, I will allow young experts to run at least 50% of my cabinet.
All of the candidates have so far spoken of problems that they blame on the incumbent government. Problems that range from inflation to unemployment. Some of the contenders find the root cause of these problems in the fact that outgoing President Rouhani has put all his eggs in the basket of the 2015 nuclear deal, which is now hanging by a thread.
Nobody can ignore the negative effects of the sanctions on our economy. But at the same time, we cannot reach out to our enemy and appeal to them to lift the sanctions. This method has not worked and will not work. We cannot pin hope on the lifting of sanctions to fix our economy. We should have relied on our own domestic capacities to have a resilient economy.
This year, the coronavirus pandemic has curtailed election rallies and electoral tours. Based on the guidelines set by the Coronavirus Combat Committee, campaigns are conducted through televised debates between candidates, feature documentaries, and speeches. Campaigning will continue until 24 hours before Election Day on June 18th. The Islamic Republic holds an average of one election each year since its establishment in 1979. Now candidates call on Iranians to turn up en masse for this year's election, as in the previous rounds, since high voter turnout is translated into a seal of approval for the legitimacy of the Islamic establishment. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Yair Lapid, the leader of Israeli opposition Yesh Atid party, informed the Israeli president that he can form a coalition cabinet. This brings to an end the era of long-term Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Under the coalition agreement, Lapid will share power with head of the right-wing Yamina, Naftali Bennett, who would be Netanyahu's immediate replacement. For the Palestinians, however, Netanyahu's removal would be no improvement, especially that the coming Prime Minister Bennett, who was a former settler leader, rejects Palestinian statehood. Palestinian officials say they expect Bennett's cabinet will even be more extreme than Netanyahu's.
For us, this coalition cabinet that was declared to replace Netanyahu's radical cabinet is even more radical when it comes to Israel's policies towards Palestinians. It will seek to expand settlements in the occupied lands. We trust none of Israeli parties. Their policy towards Palestinians won't be different.
Experts say that for the time being, Netanyahu's successors with their disparate agendas are expected to leave contentious issues unresolved. According to them, Bennett doesn't believe in a solution to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. His aim instead is to take full control of Palestinians. Moreover, they say, Bennett has some red lines he will never cross. He has long championed the right of settlement in the West Bank.
There's a consensus among all far-right parties when it comes to policies towards Palestinians. The two parties have already agreed to keep Area C of the West Bank under their control, which makes up almost 58% of the West Bank. The new cabinet will press ahead with the annexation plan, which is part of the so-called deal of the century.
Under the coalition agreement, Bennett and Lapid would rotate the role of prime minister, with Bennett taking up the post for the first 2 years and Lapid the final two. Experts say Netanyahu will not let it go easily, as the parliament still has about 12 days to swear in the cabinet. During this period, Netanyahu will do his utmost to convince enough right-wing lawmakers to vote against the new cabinet. Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight. The The protests for racial justice were wide-reaching. People from all walks of life in Britain, especially young people who took to the streets, were demanding racial justice. Not only concerned about anti-black racism in the United States, but also about deep and evident systemic racism in the United Kingdom. We now present you an article written by Richard Sudan. Richard Sudan is a journalist, writer, and television reporter. The piece is titled, New UK Police Powers Aiming to Shut Down Black Lives Matter Protests Must Be Stopped. Police crime sentencing and courts bill is on its way to becoming law, making its passage through the UK Parliament before passing through the House of Lords. In the latest move by the government to clamp down on a number of issues, including what they claim is unlawful disruption. However, the move, which aims to give the police more power to carry out their duties, has actually produced more of the very thing which critics claim is the whole reason the bill came into being in the first place, which is, of course, the very legitimate and critical right to protest. In 2020, mass demonstrations took place around the country from both Black Lives Matter supporters, galvanized by the mass global movements for justice following the murder of George Floyd in the United States, and also environmental activists raising alarm over the growing climate emergency. The protests for racial justice were wide-reaching. People from all walks of life in Britain, especially young people who took to the streets, were demanding racial justice, not only concerned about anti-black racism in the United States of America, but also about deep and evident systemic racism in the United Kingdom. Environmental protesters and demonstrations also swept across the country, with some in London causing disruption to public transport in order to get their message across and to get their voices heard. And getting the message to the forefront of public debate is precisely the point of the protests. While the British government has focused on the toppling of statues and of the inconvenience to those using London trains to get to work to justify more police power, the reality is that, should the police bill become law, it will likely be exploited to shut down very legitimate and lawful protests, with critics alarmed that the authorities will have the legal means to shut down and stifle any real criticism of the government at all. The problems of racial inequality, injustice, and of corruption and incompetence within the UK government, in many people's eyes, far outweigh and are of far greater concern than protesters stepping beyond the bounds of so-called legality. The right to protest in the United Kingdom is something purportedly sacred and is often talked about as being an essential cornerstone of Britain's so-called democracy. And yes, sometimes protests can get heated. But remember too that there are often serious questions about the conduct of the police, who many would argue themselves operate outside of the law, while at times being accused of breaking the law while operating with complete impunity. There has to be a balance, and listening to the concerns of legal experts and those with a keen eye on the importance of civil liberties, it isn't hard to see why there are serious concerns about the UK police having more powers. Many argue that the UK police need to correctly manage the existing powers which they already have and not be given more powers, which, as well as giving the police the power to keep people off the streets indefinitely, will also arguably impact and devastate the lives of Britain's traveller communities. Traveller communities have a way of life which is thousands of years old, and there are serious worries that the new police bill will be used in order to legally control their freedom of movement and to do the opposite of facilitating their way of life. Such communities are part of Britain's multicultural society and should have the same rights as everyone else and should not be treated as a nuisance to be pushed to the margins as the authorities see fit. The truth is that the British government was terrified by the collectivised message and power of protest movement last year, and in particular of the effectiveness of the Black Lives Matter movement, and the ability of such demonstrations to galvanise and inspire people to challenge power and the status quo. Also worth remembering is that a Metropolitan Police officer was charged with the murder of Sarah Everard. Some argue that there are serious problems within the police themselves, institutionally, which need rooting out, because they're given any more authority to adjudicate over the right of the public to mobilise, even if at times protests might become disruptive and hard for them to manage. When apartheid in South Africa was brought to an end, it was because mass global protests took place demanding it, and without such global protests, much needed change would have been jeopardised. Huge protests also just took place in London, demanding an end to apartheid in Palestine, with some even arguing that they were the biggest show of solidarity in the streets for the Palestinians which have ever taken place in Britain. This is something to be celebrated. But according to a new report, British media coverage of the recent Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip was biased against Palestinians and skewed public impressions. The Muslim Council of Britain's Centre for Media Monitoring analysed the British media coverage of the conflict in a 44-page report entitled Media Reporting on Palestine 2021. The Muslim Council of Britain's Centre for Media Monitoring stated that during the 11-day war, there were 62,400 online print articles and 7,997 television broadcasts in the United Kingdom reporting on the incidents. The report has revealed that while there were some examples of balanced coverage, the overall narrative was unbalanced due to the skewed language, misleading headlines, and problematic framing. Rizwana Hamid, director of the Muslim Council of Britain's Centre for Media Monitoring and co-author of the report, told the Middle East Eye that the overwhelming amount of complaints about British media's biased coverage of events in Palestine aligned with the analysis and evidence of the monitoring organisation. The report found that half of the broadcast media clips in the United Kingdom between 7th and 10th of May referred to the situation in Sheikh Jarrah neighbourhood of the city of Al-Quds as an eviction or real estate dispute, which justifies the forced displacements of Palestinians, while the Israeli action were in contravention of international laws. Regarding Israeli police brutality against Palestinian protesters and worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, the investigation highlighted numerous examples of media sources utilizing terminology such as clashes, conflict, scuffles, and skirmishes to suggest equal blame. Rizwana Hamid said, as far as language is concerned, terms such as evictions mask the illegal forced removals and expulsion of Palestinians from their homes, adding that references to conflict and clashes try to equalize what is in effect a battle between David and Goliath. The Muslim Council of Britain's Centre for Media Monitoring also cited several news reports speaking of an intifada, which it said played into fear-mongering and framing Palestinians as violent aggressors. Thus, more protests calling to kill the bill regarding the proposed police powers have also been taking place, and they will continue. It's abundantly clear that the British people do not want this bill to become law and value their right to protest and to speak truth to power as sacred. Rather than ploughing ahead with its current plans, for once this current government should listen to the demands of what seems to be the vast majority of the British people. In fact, people's demand to protest and assemble is a fundamental right of any free society and is the essence of free speech. The British government seeking the power to shut this down wherever they see fit is draconian and is the opposite of what people expect from a decent democracy.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, and I'm Atal, the host of this program. We have two guest speakers in today's discussion, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
You're welcome, brother. And Brother Ali Alavian, assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thank you for having me here.
So regarding the main features of the hegemonic powers in today's world and the challenges that they are facing, for today's discussion we want to get a very important topic which was also tackled by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the Supreme Leader of Iran, and that is the challenges that the hegemonic powers have regarding the Islamic values in today's world. When you look at the pictures of some Muslim lands from outside, you find them very much similar in terms of architecture to the Western world nowadays, with the big, big towers and the big, big buildings, okay? So I do want to say that, yes, when they are attacking the Muslim lands and the Muslim values, they are attacking your system of values. Mm-hmm. So the system of values refers to your lifestyle, your culture. And the interesting point is that when they want to make documents about the Muslim lands, they do not capture your part of the country, which is like a Western world, but your original, aboriginal, we can say, cultures and the system of values. And they win many movies, and they win Oscar, they win Golden Globe, they win so many, you know, prizes all around the world. So the system of values is good, but as good as it shows you how simple you are, how servant
third
you are,
world.
Okay, third world country you are, and okay, wow, what a country you are. But when it comes to the exact system of values, for example, looking for justice, looking for freedom, Muslims are free, okay? Mm-hmm. They are not being oppressed. Then it becomes a challenge for the Western powers. Now we have to attack them. Now we have to put discrimination among them. Now we have to put...
And what I want to pinpoint, one important point, brother, before we move towards, go towards Sayyid. Actually they are trying, they are making very good lies to deceive the whole world. Why? Under the name of democracy, this democratic movement, actually, unlike before, that they came to directly tell people that this is the power that we have and we need to colonize you and we need to take your power and to take your resources. Now, they've got mature and they know what to do and how to deal with the people. Under the name of the democracy, they go and, for example, they attack one group and they let some other group, which is their servant, to be in power. Look. Like what the kind of way that they behave Saudi Arabia. Is there any democracy in Saudi Arabia? But they know it as a democratic nation and they do not even attack it once in a blue moon. You see? But in a country...
Yeah, even they were harsher than Iran in terms of the women rights. Mm. They did not let the women to drive up 5-4 years ago, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
The women had no right to vote maybe in the country.
And they didn't have even ID.
There is no voting.
There's no worry. No, I mean, what can... And all of a sudden, when Bin Salman comes to the scene, I mean, the son, may Allah curse him, you know, for the blood of the people, of the children of Yemen on his hand. When all of a sudden he comes to the scene, wow, the most famous singers from the U.S. are invited to the U.S. The most important WWE wrestlings are held over there. You know, the car race is over there. Singers come over there. Porn stars come over there. Is this a democracy?
Mm-hmm.
This is not a system of the values, brother.
Yeah.
You are losing your system of values day by day. And believe me, if this line continues, people are ready to ban their Hajj pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are the key holder, man, over there. What are you doing? Are you changing, for example, the Jeddah and the, you know, the other cities of the Saudi Arabia into what? A bar or a whorehouse or something like that? This is what, you know, and they are trapped. You know, like Trump said, we are milking you.
Mm.
Okay, we're milking you. Is it? Well, could you remember the picture Trump was showing to Bin Salman? These are the new facilities, the missiles and the airplanes and this and that. And you want to buy them?
$400 billion.
Yeah, and the Walden and we milk you. Okay, so this is the milking sheep, and we have the milking goats.
And they're doing the same in other countries, but they do not call it directly, we're milking you. But they do milk the others.
Yes.
I don't want to name any other countries, even in our neighborhood. They are doing even worse than that, under the name of democracy. But they are actually killing people, oppressing nations. But the outcome of which is to annihilate, in their own view, in their That's own right. eyes. Annihilate what That's Islam right. wants but, and what okay. Islam is.
But Sayyid Mohsen Nawawi, I think the problem is also from the side of the planners and the Muslim lands too, not to introduce these Islamic values in a foreign manner to its people and apply them also in your countries. Because the system of values over there, but how to apply them and how to make them applicable with today's daily life in the 21st century is also very important. It's difficult, but it's important, isn't it?
That is true. And the main reason is obviously when Muslim Ummah has forgot its own values, what can you expect from them? Obviously, the Western enemies, they are basically attacking the Muslim Ummah. They want to change this way of thinking. They want to make them their slaves. But when they forgot about their own values, then no one can help them. It is the duty of the scholars, basically.
Yes.
It is the duty of, you know, the education industry. You know why I said industry? Because in the West, they call it as an industry.
That's right.
It is the duty of scholarly people that they need to basically convey the values, and they need to remind the values which they have. You know, the system in the school is now, unfortunately, for example, if I give you the example of Pakistan, for example, or other countries, if I can name them.
Yes.
The majority of school, there is a public school system, for example, that is for the poor people who do not have any money. And there is other school, private sector. Most of them, for example, in Pakistan, I can just name City School, Beacon House, I don't know. There are other schools. They all are either they have the syllabus of Oxford or Cambridge or America.
Yes.
Now, when you teach your kids such syllabuses, they're not going to learn about the values, the original values which are said by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's all right.
Number one. Number two, you know, English language, it is an international language, no doubt.
Yes.
We accept it. But this is not the main language. The main point is the people nowadays are trying to learn English.
Yes.
From the very basic, they're teaching their kids the English language. And now there is a level, for example, in the same countries, that the kids, they cannot even speak their mother language,
That's
which
right.
is, for example, Urdu, Punjabi, for yes. example, like any.
But they kind of speak English.
They can speak English.
Once I was talking to a scholar in Qom City, he was an Ayatollah. He told me that I do not let my kid to get into learn English language. An Iranian, from very beginning, I mean 7, 8 years old, say, why? This is a good age. He said, because first I have to make him familiar with his own system of values, okay, in terms of the language, system, culture, everything. And you know that learning a language brings with itself its own culture. But if a guy, for example, is a teenager, 15, 16 years old, and then he's, I mean, the bases are on the foundation are strong now.
Strong, yes.
Then he's going to, for example, learn English language. But the case is, brother, this, that unfortunately, the people who are in charge of leading the countries in the Muslim lands themselves are not familiar with these concepts, are not familiar with the system of the values in the true sense of the word. And they are also playing with the same cards that the Westerners are playing.
It's because, unfortunately, there was a time when the Western world was ruling the Muslim lands as well.
Yeah,
for example, colonizing. You know, the Britons, the East India Company, has ruled subcontinent India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka for, you know, many years. And they have their impacts when they were leaving. They divided everyone into different groups, and then they left. You know, Australia is under the England's, you know, we can say like kingdom.
Yes.
Canada is part of that. In Indo-Pak, we can say like some continent, like they were there. In Iran, we can see like the French and Americans,
yeah,
who were the
Portuguese.
Main, yes. And the rest of the world, if you see, the Muslim Ummah basically is affected by these people who came into power, who oppressed and who basically conquered in a way. These lands, and later these lands were freed by themselves. The Ottoman Empire, it was obviously, you know, dispersed by the same powers, the Western powers.
That's right.
Why they attacked the Ottoman emperorship? It's because they didn't want it. Like they never wanted Muslims to be in the power.
That's right.
Similarly, when you give the example of Bin Salman, it's again the same thing.
Yes,
it's a guy who is an Arab, mm-hmm, and who is living in a place, more most sacred place in the world, like obviously Muslims go,
yes,
for the Hajj and all those.
Yes.
But even in the same land where the Prophet,
yeah,
removed or eliminated all these things, mm-hmm, the examples which you gave,
yes,
you know, the things which he eliminated, he is bringing those things back.
Yes.
Before the Prophet, people used to do Hajj while they were naked.
And the sound is about the
nudity,
silence of the,
yes,
Muftis over there. Mm.
No, it's not because of that. Because, you know, the news says that, it's apparent, like the Western news also says that,
mm-hmm,
many Muftis or the scholars who were against these things,
mm-hmm,
they are in prison.
Yes.
Or some of them has got killed,
yes,
by Bin Salman and his,
yes,
you know, regime.
Yes.
So this Ali Saud Bin Salman is not a criteria. Having the keys of Kaaba is not the criteria,
yes,
of knowing that this person is on the right side and the others are on the wrong. Because many of the, you know, many of the princes, the princes in Saudi Arabia are in prison.
Mm-hmm.
We can see, you know, that columnist who got killed in Turkey.
Jamal Khashoggi.
Yeah.
Jamal Khashoggi.
Why he got killed? What was the reason? You know, other princes,
yes,
like in Turkey or the other countries.
He was a journalist, yes.
Yeah.
Man, so, he was suffocated for 10 minutes. Then he was chopped off into different pieces.
Mm.
Then he was melted into the acid. Wow, man, what? Come on. And the world is being quiet at the time of Trump presidency.
And it is
the world was quiet. Now the Biden presidency, the world is quiet. They say, okay, shall we look for that or shall we not?
And they're
so
still observant in the Human
Rights
Commission.
They call it democracy and they call it justice, yeah?
Yeah.
According to them.
Yes, brother.
No, the surprise is that they are still observer of the Human Rights Commission,
mm-hmm,
in UN, and no one says anything. And America is also, and the West is defending them.
Yes.
As their friend, as a country that actually follows human rights.
Let me make one more thing clear, that in the world, if we see, you know, these powers, the,
yes,
Western powers, they're talking about democracy and the justice. Who started the world war?
Mm-hmm.
Who were those people?
That's
these
right.
were these people who started, and they had the fight.
Okay.
World War One, World War Two.
Yes.
How many people got killed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if United Nations was not built,
yes,
you know, if it wasn't created,
mm-hmm,
this war was gonna obviously,
that's all right,
continue till now. And still they're looking for a war. For example, the things which Israel,
that's
is doing,
yes,
the things which America has done in Iraq, in Syria, you know, funding the ISIS and you know, other terrorist groups, Taliban, these all are funded by America.
That's all right.
We,
The people, both men and women, have to get back and have a return to their, you know, true system of values. I could remember that recently in the news, I saw that the female German team of gymnastics, okay,
mm-hmm.
has covered all their bodies from neck to toe. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they said that when in the previous years we were over there with naked eyes, the men over there mocked us and betrayed us, and they looked at us as a sexual toy. So now we are covering from neck to toe to not have a sexual look at us, okay? This is an Islamic value. I mean, this is what that covering your body with protection,
brother,
to you.
This is the rationalism that Islam actually focuses on.
Yes.
And one of the key, let's say, points that even the hegemonic power is attacking Islam for, this rationalism is going to spread in the whole world.
Mm.
Look, when people slowly want to find themselves, be back to the true teachings of the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad,
right.
and his purified progeny, they are actually attacking this.
That's
and this
right.
is what we have been actually saying from over four decades.
Yeah. And unfortunately, from inside, some people are attacking it too. This is the sad news. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Ali Al-Abiyan and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, for your nice elaboration regarding how to revive the Islamic system of values that is a big challenge for the Westerners and hegemonic powers to tackle. First, they are attacking your system of values, then they are attacking your land, then they are attacking your resources, and day by day you can see that in terms of clothes, hairstyle, lifestyle, everything, food style, you are a Westerner but living in the eastern part of the world, and this is the sad news. It was very kind of you, dear listeners. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. These series are produced by Brother Mahmoud. Please bring your comments and ideas. We can say on our email address, coi@irib.ir. Also, you can visit our YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Do not forget to visit our website, parstoday.com/Ian. Call of Islam page. See another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanillah.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.